guys, welcome back to the ICast. This is Chris, and I'm with my co-host, as always, Ike.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us.
Live and in person, by the way.
Yes, I drove up to Canada on Friday, so we are in the same spot.
Yeah, now in, we'll call it ICast North Studios. But this time, we missed a week, mainly because there was just things just getting too crazy and having to run around and get stuff done, but this week, thankfully, we've had a little bit of a, you know, more of a larger reprieve, and now we've actually had a lot of big news that came up this week, specifically the U.S. budget crisis that's going on, the debt ceiling. This is something that pops up like every couple of years,
yeah.
You know, where the debt ceiling, I remember during Obama's thing, right, during his first term, during the 2010 midterms, right, that debt ceiling became a huge thing again because you had a whole bunch of Tea Partiers, you know, who were elected for the first time in that period, right, in 2010, who had no idea what any of these things were and thought that the idea of the debt ceiling was more spending or more whatever, right? You know, it's one of those concepts that we have to have explained every couple of years because it seems like we forget it every single time, you know, that there's this level of spending that we have that, you know, all governments have, and that when they need to increase the spending to meet their already, you know, their agreements that they already, you know, currently are trying to meet, right? It should be a normal process, but the debt ceiling now has become this weird sort of like inflection point that Republicans are able to use whenever they want. On top of that, you know, the infrastructure bill is being like thrown up into this entire mess,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so a large part of it is, so, you know, when it comes to the debt ceiling, it's, you know, governments, the legislative branch, says, okay, we, you know, our billing or our expenditure cannot exceed XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you get close to it, they have to increase the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
Right, so that you don't default, because if you default as a government, that's not good at yeah. all. Basically, you're saying I, you know, racked up all this debt, and yeah, no, I'm gonna declare bankruptcy.
Yeah, we'll be right. unable to pay for it, and it's what it's gonna do is gonna take a lot of just prospective future earnings,
yeah.
wipe them out
Correct.
Instantaneously. And then the U.S. has a lot of debt.
Right.
To be very fair, every country on the planet has debt.
Right. Every country has... right, exactly.
And it does this... It's the way our system works.
Right.
Is that if everyone owes each other, then everyone can sort of be happy with each other.
Right. It's like a cascading effect. Now, yeah. what happens when the debt ceiling gets close is typically the legislative branch will increase it. If they don't increase it, what happens is the Department of Treasury in the U.S., they can't pay their bills except when they get tax revenues. Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the issue with the Trump tax reforms.
Yeah.
There was a lot of tax revenues. There's a lot of breaks that were given to corporations that have impacted the revenue generation. So,
yeah,
you know, 90, it's interesting. Yeah. It you know, if you think about budgets, right, Chris, if you look back historically at budgets, the expenditure of the U.S. has always exponentially grown under a Republican.
Yeah, I mean...
But when it comes to Democrats, when they're in power, then it's like, oh, no, you can't spend that money.
Well, this flip-flop on fiscal responsibility that yeah. the Republicans have, it's clear as day, because it happens very clearly where, you know, let's go as far back as Reagan.
Yeah.
Right? Reagan screws up the economy. Reaganomics does not work.
Yeah.
Right? It ranks up a ton of debt. Right? We
yeah.
go into the Bush years, where then there's the first Iraq War. And then we get into Clinton, where there's actually a surplus, oddly
yeah.
enough. But Clinton also lays the seeds and the foundation for, you know, a decade after a financial collapse by, you know, repealing Glass-Steagall.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, right.
Without the banking controls and regulations on them will eventually lead to a 2008 situation. Come down to now Bush instigates what is, you know, the United States' longest war, right?
Rack up a whole bunch of debt.
Racks up more debt faster than ever.
Yep.
Right? Presides over a financial collapse, right? And then finally, you know, exits power, transitions over to Obama. Obama comes in and right away pretty much bails out everybody.
Yeah.
The bailout process is flawed.
Right.
In that so many people who tanked the U.S. economy really got off with it.
Yeah.
On top of that, you know, his healthcare rollout was not that great.
No, it wasn't. It really didn't give universal health care.
It wasn't. It's as far away from a single payer system.
The only people who won was the insurance companies.
Yeah, because they can now jacked up their rates because of this existence of, you know, this, because of the Affordable Care Act, of this, you know, this alternative that wasn't really an alternative.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the problem, is that it wasn't this government single-payer source that you could, you know, go to, and they would be at this reasonable price, and it would undercut the market, and they would create competition.
Right.
None of that happened. No.
And it was, and, you know, incidentally, it was drafted, you know...
Heritage Foundation, yeah.
Yeah, which was Mitt Romney's.
Yeah. And, of course, he was against it. Yeah, he was against it in the federal sense, because, you know, because Obama does it, it's bad,
mm-hmm.
right, at the time. And then, but, like, that's his real only legislative achievement, is fundamentally a very, very flawed healthcare bill.
Right, but that's because the Tea Party came in, and the Republicans took the House and the Senate and said, McConnell repeatedly has said, we are going to make sure he's a one-term president.
Yeah. And they failed, but they were able to successfully hold him off on the legislative level.
Right. So he became a lame duck president.
Yeah, he became a lame duck president for 6 years. And his sort of... Now, that on that was his on the domestic scale. On the, you know, foreign policy scale, right, he ramped up a lot of the, you know, the surge, counterinsurgency, the drone war... All right. of this stuff gets ramped up under him, right? Where, you know, he came in talking about ending Guantanamo.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Now we get to Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trump does this huge tax base break for the rich. 92% of all the gains go straight to the 1% in corporations.
Yep.
Right?
We have a COVID pandemic.
Yeah, we have a COVID pandemic, which he handled so poorly. It ravages an entire country.
Yeah.
Makes it the largest, you know, official leader on the planet for COVID infections, mm-hmm. COVID deaths, everything. Right? A first world nation is on paper worse than third world nations. In reality, it's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
However, first world nations play by the rules.
Right.
And that means reporting. Trump didn't want to play by the rules. He thought he could, you know... Hey, listen, if we don't do tests, we'll have, like, less cases. Remember that?
Right, yep.
And then on top of that, Trump also increased his spending by another few trillion.
Correct. So what we have is we have a increase in spending. That means that the set-aside that Congress has put in the do-not-exceed amount is rapidly being reached.
Mm-hmm.
And... the legislative branch has to increase or has to set the new budget, which happens October 1st. So they have to reach an understanding of what the new budget is going to be September 30th. And here's the thing is, you know, Chris, all of these departments, they have this like midnight rush to make sure that, you know, any funding that was allocated to their department, they have to have a contract in place and invoice in order for them. Otherwise, come the next fiscal year, their funding gets cut, right? Mm-hmm. So you have this like insanity. And I've got friends who work in, you know, procurement who said like, we, you know, that up to 11:59, September 30th, they're executing contracts and invoices mm-hmm. for work that may not have been done, right?
Yeah.
Because solely for budget purposes and spending for the next fiscal year. How does that tie in with everything is if so Congress has passed the budget or, you know, to extend, but it still has to go to the Senate. So if Senate doesn't approve it, then we've got a, we do have a Democratic
pseudo majority with Manchin and Sinema right. being the
holdouts. And they're a completely different discussion, right?
Yeah.
But if they don't reach an agreement, if the Senate does not reach an agreement with what the House has passed, we are going to have a shutdown. And what that means is the government is going to come to a standstill. Normally in a shutdown, those agencies that make money, get revenue, they're going to continue to work. But the problem is these different departments, agencies rely on each other. So the government still doesn't work because on one side you have, you know, you may have a department that you need information in order to submit to another agency. It just is really extremely dysfunctional.
And because of that, essentially, a shutdown is functionally a full shutdown.
Yeah.
Right? Even if there are still agencies who are opening or are being active, they're so severely hampered.
Yeah.
And then the things that we need in order to interact with those agencies are so severely limited that it is, in effect, just a shutdown.
Right.
Now,
do you remember when Pelosi called it, got Trump to call it a Trump shutdown?
Yeah.
That was like insane. I mean,
that's the one thing, though. It's like he was so like focused on his branding and like everything is like, no, it's me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I'm strong. But then it's like you took the blame for something that no one likes. No one likes it when the government shuts down.
Right.
Right. Because they're like, these guys are still, you know, being paid.
I'm pretty sure his handlers were face planting themselves.
Yeah. Well, you know, the same thing with, you know, good people on both sides, Charlottesville, yeah. right?
Right.
Like, you know, the 4 years that he was president showed that, you know, there was a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, something that, you know, what can I say? Like, we, not to sort of shift, you know, things here, right? But, like, we just went through an election up here in Canada.
Yeah.
And it was, ended up in the exact same result as the election 2 years ago.
Was it the same number?
It's almost exact. It's like up or down one or two seats. That's it.
Okay.
Right. Wow. So I believe Liberals up one, Conservatives down two, NDP down two, Bloc, you know, up one.
Okay.
Like or Bloc up two. Like it's literally just one or two gain or loss, right?
Right.
Technically, Conservatives had a loss of seats.
Right.
Which doesn't look good for them right now. Normally when this happens, there's going to be another leadership race. But this is what happens with a minority government.
Do you think there's going to be a leadership race? Like, who's a strong enough leader to replace Trudeau?
No, not a leadership race for the Liberals. For the Conservatives.
Yeah, they have not found a good leader.
Well, this happened to the Liberals, too. After Paul Martin got, you know, trounced by Harper with his first minority government, then we had a situation where then he went to Stephane Dion, and then he got destroyed by Harper because Stephane Dion's language barrier made it so that he says stupid shit all the time.
Yeah.
And then after that, we got Michael Ignatieff, who got hit by a scandal of that he has an American citizenship,
mm-hmm.
right? And it was like, are you going to give up your American citizenship? He has, you know, been remarked saying, hey, if this doesn't work out, I'll just go back to the States, right? No one likes that. That sunk them for a while. Finally, they got to Trudeau. Right, which then, you know, now he's in power. Conservatives are in the same thing. They went through a couple of, you know, lame duck guys, and then they're going to go in, and we're going to see what happens from there. But yeah, we don't know what anything is going to evolve. But the big thing was is that even though an election happened and there was no change, people were like, "Oh, such a waste."
Right.
Right, and I'm like, "Why is it a waste? Is an election a waste?" All right, if nothing changes, all right, is it only, you know, like, worth it if there is a change, right?
Yeah.
And I go, like, no, it's like, it doesn't matter. Elections are always worth it, right? everyone, like, we should have the, I wish they weren't as expensive, but we should have them more often, right? We should be, like, imagine, like, that's the entire point, is that, you know, like, you're able to, like, after you're doing the review, like, yeah, this didn't work this time, guys.
Yeah.
Right? Would people, like, constantly go to them? Do the Australia thing, you know, just make it mandatory to vote in elections?
So let me ask you this. In Australia, right, it's mandatory. So what, do people get penalized?
If there's a fine.
There's a fine. Yeah. Okay.
There's a fine.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to fly in the U.S.
No, it's definitely not going to fly in the U.S. Australia does stuff that's not going to fly anywhere on the planet. But it works.
For Australia. Well, I don't think it would fly in Canada.
No, it wouldn't. I think mandatory voting would fly in Canada.
You think so?
It would work. It would work. Right? And it would solve a lot of problems. Right, because it just opens up the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're talking about proportional representation. I'm not a big fan of alternate, you know, voting mechanisms. I'm still first past the post. It works the best.
Yeah.
Right? Fundamentally, because it's individual district equals individual seat equals individual, you know.
Right.
You know.
And that determines who's going to
because
the party in power, and it's the leader of the party in power that
because people go because sometimes you can have a situation where 30% of the vote gets more than 50% of the seats,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there's so many parties and the vote gets split across and you only need to win by so much.
Right.
Right? You just need the most votes in the district, right?
Right.
If
we don't want a situation like Israel, which has like so many factions, right?
So
like to get one vote.
That's
or even the Italian politics, where you have you have like
30 different parties,
and for a majority party, you have like 10
that
form a coalition. Which
So there's advantages and disadvantages to that. The advantages is that, you know, relatively little gets done, and so no one is able to do anything too egregious, right? Because it takes a lot of support to get anything done. And so it becomes very in the middle of the road. Disadvantages is that you never really get a lot done. And you see a lot of those countries that have that sort of thing have been really suffering lately because they've been they get struck by indecision, right? On any given issue.
Mm-hmm.
New Zealand worked out the best, but that's because they now have like a super majority in that system. So like they did something to get that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in order to get like a supermajority and like a proportional representation system, you got to be killing it.
Yeah.
But that's unique. First past the post works, and when people look at the numbers on a big level, on like a federal level, whether it comes to the U.S. or Canada, they're like, "There's 5% of the vote went to this party, but they have no seats."
Yeah.
Right. It's like, how is that fair? It's like because their vote is spread out across the thing. It's vote per district, right? You know who. What people want is like, hey, you just vote, all the votes are tallied up, and then they split up seats.
Yeah.
Right? But it's like, you're not voting for a person ever again, right? You're voting for a party, right? A platform, and dear leader, right? You never want to get into the position where you want to forever be able to go like, hey, listen, this guy's, you know, this guy in this area works for us. Right? It's not that way now. The disadvantage of first past the post.
Well, no, I think that is in the U.S.
It like is in
my,
the U.S.
My congressman represents me. Congressman does not, or congressperson does not represent Michigan.
No, absolutely. Right? That's the case. It's your area has to represent you. If you just do it on this weird wide scale, you don't know who represents you. Exactly. Right. But a problem with first past the post is that it really leads just to a duopoly, right? It leads to a Republican versus Democrat situation. It leads to a conservative versus liberal situation up here.
Mm-hmm.
We have a third party, right, which bleeds off liberal votes, right? And that's the NDP. And then we also are building up another third party for the, fourth party. For the conservatives, the PPC, which has bled off votes from them,
mm-hmm.
right? And
did they gain any seats?
No, zero seats. But it's a matter of time. It's a matter of time before those.
And they're from where?
The People's Party.
Yeah, they're predominantly where.
No, they're all over.
They're all over.
They're
really
all
because
over.
Last time there was a fourth party, it was really
Wild Rose out west.
Yeah, it was Midwest, right? Mm-hmm. Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, oh, and bro. Alberta. Yeah, yeah.
Those prairie guys.
BC was NDP.
Yeah.
And which is odd. NDP or Liberal?
BC goes NDP or Liberal. There's no Conservative Party in BC. However, the Liberal Party in BC is technically Conservative.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. But that all being said, right, what happened, you know, is the election occurred. It's over and done with. It cost a lot of money, but that's the point of elections, is that the more you have them, right?
Right.
And just because there was no change doesn't mean that's a bad thing, right? It just means people still want the exact same thing that they wanted before.
Yeah.
Right? The general makeup of everything. Taking that into account, right?
Chris, I have to say, I think the Liberals did handle the pandemic relatively well.
Yeah, when you look at other countries around the world, Canada handled the pandemic very well. If you look at the provinces where the pandemic was not handled very well,
yeah,
it really was Ontario. It really was Alberta, right?
Where there's a Conservative or Tories.
Yeah, if you look at the countries that did very poorly during the pandemic, it was countries that had very conservative policies.
Right.
Right, the UK, Italy.
Although, once Boris Johnson got it, he was like, well, this is like serious shit. Now we got to do this.
But even the UK is now lagging behind with, like when we talk about vaccination rates all the time, right?
Right.
The UK is lagging behind in vaccination rates. I didn't believe that New Zealand, right, is lagging behind in vaccination rates.
Really?
Yeah, their double dose is like 50%, I think.
Is it because they were had done an amazing job in terms of how they were able to battle it, and because they were able to keep it so low. But here's the thing is, you know what, keeping it so low, I mean, they did it by taking all these draconian measures. You couldn't come in, you had to quarantine, it was through a government facility, blah, 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 right? Like, it was pretty harsh in terms of the steps that they took.
Yes.
I'm really surprised that their citizenry is not double vaccinated.
Yeah, it makes no sense. So I'm looking at the official thing here. It's 50% of the country's population has been double dosed. Meanwhile,
Canada, is it because of supply chain or because people just don't want to do it?
I don't know. Supply chain could possibly be it. New Zealand, generally, you know, anything involving the supply chain in New Zealand is always like a problem.
Yeah, because it's an island.
Yeah, you know, it's an island nation, literally at the ass end of the world. What can I say? I mean, they hit it well, but their vaccination rate is lagging behind. Israel, which had the best vaccination rate, is also now lagging behind because the religious conservatives within the country have you know, sort of like kiboshed that. And then the U.S. has hit its plateau for a couple of months now.
Yeah, that's because, you know, Chris, in the U.S., I mean, those who wanted the vaccine got the vaccine, right? And they got their second dose too, so it's not, so now it's who didn't want the vaccine, they're not, and you know, they're still not wanting the vaccine, they're still not getting it. I mean, I think there's some family and friends pressure that's happening now to those who have not received the vaccine. But then you have to also take a look at the different states, right? There wasn't a coherent vaccination plan last year. When the vaccine started coming out, states were different in terms of how they were doing the vaccines. I know New Jersey actually has been really good. I mean, I think New Jersey has something like 8.9 million, but we've actually done like 10 million in doses because it, you know, not only, and there's a, and that's not just all New Jerseyans have gotten the dose. No, it's just, New Jersey has also administered to out-of-staters.
Yeah, who right. are in New Jersey at the time.
Got right, it. Who were
yeah,
in
no,
New
it's,
Jersey at the time.
I think we're going to reach that level in Canada as well. The total amount of... I think that there's somewhere around 15 to 20%
mm-hmm.
all around the planet, you know, that will not take this vaccine. The problem is that where we want to get to, we need to get 90%. And what can I say? You know, like, just all throughout the thing. But nevertheless, you know, from the U.S. budget to, like, going all the way down to vaccine rates, you know, in New Zealand and other places. Let's move on to actually our next story. And mainly because this is going to actually, all these stories are going to, like, sort of feed into each other, these next two ones.
Yeah.
Being the Evergrande situation out of China. Now, so the baseline of this, where I've done my research, was that Evergrande is, like, a major property developer in China.
Yeah.
So much so that they have, like, roughly 2% of the GDP of China that they play with. But the problem is that they were so severely leveraged out. They had so much debt that they, you know, they weren't able to make payroll. They were taking, you know, they were taking deposits on houses that they didn't deliver, right? They weren't able to build what they were supposed to. And so Evergrande was fast becoming like the Lehman Brothers of China. It was about, you know, we're seeing it like at the precipice where it's going to pop, right? Yeah. Create another, like, essentially, they were going to wipe out a whole bunch of people's money and earnings.
Savings
that they put into housing, which is not going to exist, right? You know, sort of like, yes, yeah, like 50-50 Lehman Brothers Enron sort of situation where, like, you know, there's like this mirror of like fake shit that no one's ever going to get. And, you know, the issue is that Evergrande doing this has limited, it has tanked the market around the world because, mm-hmm. you know, we have a lot of Chinese debt. As well, right. As the Chinese having a lot of ours, right? Sort of like the interconnectivity of those financial systems. Any sort of like effect in China will damage them, but in turn, those who own the debt, you know, some of that Chinese debt, mainly American markets, will also get hit by it as well. You know, the issue now is like, so Evergrande is reaching this point. We know they're reaching this point. Is China going to jump in and bail them out? China, you know, the CCP should very easily be able to, like, sort of jump in, nationalize, and then and grab it. But there's a little bit more complexity to it. That being said, like, this is the next, you know, like, there's a government shutdown that we're just talking about. And now this financial disaster that's going on in China, which could cascade out if China doesn't do anything about it.
For a society that's so controlled by the government, the fact that they allowed this organization
to run rampant like this
is, well, it's, I think, indicative of, you know, the, hate to say it, corruption at the higher levels.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's pay to play is just a normal, it's a normal thing, and corruption exists everywhere, right? But China is particularly susceptible to it. Right. I mean, I'm sure that they try to weed it out among themselves, you know, try to build their own little perfect empire. But, the higher you get, the more likely you'll be able to, you know, buy someone off. And that's the thing, right? Like, we see it all the time. Chinese billionaires, you know, who are able to do certain things versus Chinese billionaires who are not. Right. Who hides their money outside of China versus hiding their money inside of China. Right, it's all different, and you know we'll see some like Jackie Chan is forever celebrated,
mm-hmm.
right? Because he goes deep and he, you know, like he's all about the CCP,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, like there's a lot, the guys who are going deep, they're allowed to keep their money, they're allowed to do whatever the hell they want, they're given like this international, you know, scope, they're allowed to, you know, talk and whatever, they stay quiet about the CCP in other places, but they're all pro it back home.
Mm-hmm.
Right, those, anyone who steps out of line, you're out.
Right.
What can I say? Like, there's a ton of Chinese billionaires now, right? who really know that they can't leave. They're given this international ability to go out, but they really, it's like, but they have connections at home that can stop them, right?
Yeah.
You essentially now have people of power. Like billionaires who are afraid of the government and are willing to do what the government says, right? This is not really a U.S. thing yet because billionaires control the government as opposed to the other way around. Right. But China is trying to control the billionaires. That being said, you know, there are certain billionaires who are so high, so, you know, up on the top, nothing can touch them. And like an example would be the most recent thing that happened. I think it was just today. Meng Wanzhou, she was the daughter CFO. Of yeah CFO of Huawei. She's the daughter of the Huawei president or head or CEO, something like that. You know, she has been detained for 2 years in Canada pending an extradition hearing to the United States. And I mean, the basis around it was that the U.S. issued an arrest warrant. She was arrested in Vancouver in the airport, placed under house arrest while she was fighting her extradition. In that time period, the Chinese government arrested two individuals known colloquially as the two Michaels.
Mm-hmm. Right? Canadians.
Two Canadians. And then they were, you know, given prison sentences, I believe like almost 10 years each, hard labor.
Yep.
You know, they were starting their prison sentences. And this was, everyone in the world very clearly saw this as a tit for tat sort of situation.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, you took one of ours, we'll take one of yours.
Right. Well, but we'll they take, say yeah. two of yours.
Yeah, yeah. It's like one of ours, two of yours, right?
Right.
You know, I think they both hit them on espionage charges or something like that. You know, the easy thing that, you know, any sort of Chinese thing does. But here's the big thing, right? As soon as the, like, the Meng Wanzhou sort of, like, extradition thing was a Trump era thing specifically designed to just screw with China, right? It was happening in the middle of the Chinese trade war that he was, you know, pushing.
Yeah,
like there was a lot going on there.
Trump, didn't you also say that there was also a, it was also an attempt to see about Canadian loyalty?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's like, where the Canadians gonna do, like, there was a time when Trump said that Canada was a national security risk. Right, to the U.S.
Crazy.
Exactly, right? Like, that allowed him to get away with stuff that he just, you know, dealt with in when they renegotiated NAFTA, yeah. which amounted to absolutely nothing except for a name change.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
It's one of those things that, like, it looks good on paper, but the more and more you see about it, it's like, this thing was not worth it.
Right.
There was nothing to be gained. She was already, some people are just untouchable, right? Like her. These guys, eventually, you know, they made, I think the Biden administration just sort of like, was like, this is too much of a headache. Just be done with it.
Yeah.
And, yep, Justice Department sort of made a deferred action, deferred plea agreement with her.
Yeah.
She got out. She, as she was flying out, the two Michaels also got out. And what can I say? This, the clearest example of a, you know, Cold War prisoner swap.
Yeah, and we've been talking about this too, right? That China's been wanting to be, is trying to position itself to be much stronger on the international stage.
Yeah.
And this is an example of it. It's not the U.S., USSR, Soviet Union, Cold War. We're entering into a completely different type of Cold War. I think Russia wants to continue to feel like they are, but I think the Cold War is going to be with China.
Russia no longer is like the superpower, mainly because Russia fundamentally is a cult built around Putin.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like he Stalinized it back to a central head of power like himself. Right? He's made it so that he really is the only real authority. But the problem,
what do you think is going to happen to Russia when Putin?
Yeah, but that's the thing. He's not laid any of the groundwork or the facilities or the tools for succession.
Right,
like that's the,
so we're gonna have like a Stalinless like situation.
Well, that's the thing, right? Post you know Stalin's death, there was like this great period of turmoil where someone then comes out, sort of has to reject Stalin, you know, saying I'm the new wave, and that's Khrushchev's taken out almost, you know, soon afterwards because of, you know, international politics, and then we get back to a hardening of the Cold War,
right
instead of a thawing. And then, you know, it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. China, the difference is that Xi Jinping, you know, Winnie the Pooh, as, you know, he's known on the internet. This is probably going to get us banned in China, but I don't care.
okay.
Yeah, but.
And why is he known as Winnie the Pooh? Because I'm sorry.
It's a meme. It's a meme where it's like it popped up and then he banned it. Like, you couldn't. Oh. Yeah. And because he banned it on, like, it's banned in China to make him like Winnie the Pooh.
Okay.
And so it's now just like, all right, well, because you banned it, we have to do it. Okay.
Love free speech.
Yeah. But so, like, he also has a cult built around him now.
Mm-hmm.
He's also solidified his power. He's also, you know, like, created he's doing Putin-esque moves, right? But Putin is limited by his sphere of influence.
Right.
Right? You know, his sphere of influence is really just, you know, Eastern Europe, right? And, you know, around his borders, right? Yeah. He has oil control in an era where oil is less and less relevant.
Yeah.
Right? Where, you know, everyone's trying to get off the stuff. So, yeah, Putin, he hasn't built any of the structures needed for his future. China, however, I mean, that monster has been going from the 80s forward.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they have been moving in, like, this way forward and forward and forward and forward. And now they're in this regressive stage with Xi, but it's not, it's more regressive on the personal level. Right? I mean, was I around for Tiananmen Square? Like, when did that happen? Like, 90? No, that was in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was way before I was born. You know, like, that was their inflection point, and it failed, right? And that, we're going to see probably another inflection point like that again. You know, finally, the whole, you know, the coronavirus situation is just another aspect of China that we're going to deal with in the future, right? Where there's more, you know, there's more stuff that's going to have to be dealt with. But what can I say? China, the main issue 89. Now.
89.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, when it comes to all of this, right, we're in the second Cold War, right? The difference is that it's no longer, it's not about, this one is going to be like the first one, right? Geopolitical struggles,
yeah.
Proxy wars, you know, trying to exert influence, trying to, you know, get natural resources.
Yeah.
Right? Which governments are we going to prop up? Which governments are they going to prop up? Which guys are we going to make a deal with? You know, even though we know they're the bad guys.
Yeah.
Right? But they just so happens to say we won't make a deal with the Chinese.
Right.
Right? Chinese are going for Africa. Right? They're making a play for Africa.
They've been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah. The Chinese are trying to take the South China Sea.
Yeah.
Right? They're trying to exert more control over the Pacific. You know, they're propping up North Korea.
Yeah.
Well,
Chris, that they've been doing that forever. That's not anything new.
Yeah. But it's like their sphere of influence is expanding rapidly.
Yeah, it is. Where they're actively doing it. Yeah. They're very aggressive about it.
The Russians have been sort of beat back into, like, their small sphere of influence in Europe, right? Whereas before they had, you know, South America, you know, parts of Eastern Europe, parts of, you know, Asia, right? Now China is going to try to do the same thing. And really the only thing that organizations like the UN and the WHO have been damaged because of this, because of essentially they're kowtowing to China.
Yeah.
Right? The only organization that's going to be important in the future is things like NATO.
Yeah.
Right? Which Trump tried to like rip apart.
Yeah.
You know, like Trump went after his allies harder than he did his enemies.
Yeah.
You know, it was this weird sort of situation, right?
But see, I think Trump knew exactly what they were doing, and I think it was because of the influence of other third parties.
Yeah. I mean, what can I say?
Look at all the concessions he got from the Chinese for his family.
Yeah.
Anyways, this was not supposed to be a Trump podcast, so I'd like to sort of shift away from it because, you know, we're always consistently, like, going back to him. But yeah, I mean, we are in a new Cold War. Absolutely, that's without a doubt. And the pandemic clearly showed a lot of countries where their vulnerabilities are, and in a way, what happened with the pandemic was good for us because it did bring to light like what we need to strengthen.
Yeah.
As countries, right?
Yeah.
And as individuals as well.
Yeah, no, there's the, like, we saw our weak spots, right?
Yeah.
PPE, vaccines, right? Like, there's certain things that we realize that need to be handled in country.
In country. You cannot outsource it to a third country.
Yeah.
That's your fucking supply chain.
Yeah.
It absolutely can't happen.
Yeah.
Cardboard boxes, fine. Go ahead. Right? But something so important like vaccines and... even for that matter, you know, food. I mean, you have to have agricultural growth within your country as well.
Yeah.
You can't rely you know, 90% on outside.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not for absolute protectionism.
I'm not
either. But there needs to be this clawback from, like, you know, my brother keeps on talking about this, where post-70s, right, you have this creation and exodus of major work corporations, jobs, to the third world, right? Being pushed out, being outsourced.
Because it was cheaper.
Exactly, right? And this was, it was allowed because it was all about, you know, like, people hate globalization. This is the aspect they hate. They don't hate anything else. Mm-hmm. They're okay with the free exchange of ideas. They're okay with, you know, free exchange of cultures, foods, like everything, you know, like goods. They're okay with all of that. What, you know, things that you can't get in certain places, they're all about it. You know, they want to be able to get anything from anywhere, anytime.
Right.
Right?
Right.
The problem is that they've taken essentially that buying power, which was created by jobs, which was created by, you know, corporations being in the U.S., right? They've taken that buying power, shifted it to other places. Now those, you know, places that, you know, the Midwest that used to have all that, it's all shrunken up and died, right? These first world countries have become more dependent for all of their needs from third world countries, right? While we just move around money,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's like the major, you know, economic drive of the first world. It's just moving money around.
Yeah.
You know, like, the entire point of England is that it's just a giant bank, right? For Europe to do nefarious things,
mm-hmm.
right? More so than the Swiss are,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's the, like, what else does England even have?
Right.
Right? It's all, everyone just works in financial services there to some extent or another.
Right.
Right? Or they work in whatever, like, normal services to each other. That, you know, they don't produce anything, like, crazy. California produces innovation, right? But that's a coastal nation. That's a coastal area. New York produces just moving money around. Just produces money. There is a ton of agriculture in the U.S. A ton of good arable land.
Yeah.
You know, they have a lot, right? Canada has a ton of natural resources. Eventually, there's going to be, like, this move. There's going to have to be this move away, and these protectionist ideas, these, like, say what you want. America first is not a bad idea. If it was actually America first.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, right? It's like, listen, we want to do things for us.
Right.
Right? We want to, and I'm all about it. I believe in Canada first. I believe in America first. I believe every country should have their vote and best interest.
Right.
Right? And should work to that goal. The reality is, was it really in America's best interest or the people's best interest? Under Trump, we saw it wasn't.
Yeah.
Right?
In that America first, it was really, that was a political statement. That was a political maneuver.
Yeah.
It wasn't really thought out in what is the best interest of America. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't consider myself a protectionist. I believe in free exchange of thoughts, ideas, free flow of goods as well,
mm-hmm.
right? I also believe in free flow of labor, but again, there's, you know, this free flow of labor, goods, and services, they're all within that, you know, parameter of regulation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it can't be all completely unfiltered, unfettered, without any controls. You have to have controls, mm-hmm. right? Otherwise, things are going to come into the country that are not good for
citizenry,
right? So, but, and yes, and each country. So when I think about, you know, what the pandemic has taught us, there's certain things that we have to have access to within the country.
Yeah, you cannot self-reliance.
You can't 100% rely on a third country for all your PPE.
Yeah.
Or your vaccinations, for your pharmaceuticals. Like, it can't be manufacturing. And quite frankly, Chris, you know what? If it's manufacturing in a third country or a developing country, you have to wonder about the controls in there, because here in the U.S., we have a lot of controls, right?
Yeah.
And in Canada, we have controls. But And those controls are highly regulated. They're reviewed by certain agencies. You don't have that control when you're in a developing country. They're going to cut corners.
Yeah,
they're
not
going to use the best sources.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely something that we see in NAFTA with Mexico, right?
Yeah.
Mexico, like, their environmental regulations, the way that they get around it is their environmental regulations and their safety regulations are extremely lax.
Yeah.
Right? Life is cheap down there. Right? You can afford to do all these sort of things. Same thing with all these other places. They're willing to, you know, be lax on safety, pollution, environmental, you know, everything that they can in order to split stuff out. These companies, of course, now international companies rely entirely on their name. They try to get it as best as they can.
Right.
But there's still a ton of places to skim off the top.
Yeah.
Still a ton of places to get around an issue by, you know, messing it up. And always trust in the laziness of others.
Yeah. And it's not to say, you know, the multinationals that have that source out to third parties, manufacturers don't have, you know, social responsibility contractual obligations that are there, because, you know, if they don't follow with it, then the MNC is going to terminate
mm-hmm.
the contract. But if they're making 50 million, like, okay, if we've made 50 million, right, and they get found out, they'd be like, okay, the contract's terminated, but they've still made 50 million.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, it's
but
yeah.
Yeah, but going back to it, I think the pandemic, yes, we are in a Cold War and countries do need to some level understand what should be. I'm not saying 100%, but there should be. You should at least have a quarter of what's needed
mm-hmm.
at the facilities within. Like manufacturing,
I mean,
manufacturers were, they were closed down here.
Yeah, I mean.
Everything was moved out.
I mean, one of the most efficient sort of systems in the United States, using the military industrial complex as an example, is like, say, an F-22 fighter jet.
Yeah.
A part for that F-22 fighter jet is built in every one of the 50 states.
Yeah.
Right? You've made it so that now every state benefits, every state wants it, and you can't stop it.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to get hit by it.
Yeah. Right.
Right? And so taking that, unfortunately, just leads to more violence and death. But that same rule applies.
It's right. It's a good example of how you can take that model.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah. Spread it throughout all 50 states and help all 50 states, right? Create jobs everywhere. Yeah. Like the government, people say the government shouldn't be a jobs creating program. I think that's entirely wrong. The government should be fueling.
Yeah.
The government already does it.
The government shouldn't be paying out, though, for no work done.
Yeah,
okay,
no.
I'm sorry. That's where I have a problem.
Yeah.
It's where the government's, you know, you're looking at the government for a handout. I'm sorry. That's not what my tax dollars are for, but I'm okay with my tax dollars being spread around the 50 states.
Well, that's the point, right? And you know, vigilance and, you know, good budgeting is always going to be the problem.
Yeah.
Right? But all that being said, we've learned that, you know, that the status quo of what we've been living in, you know, the last 20 years, you know,
mm-hmm.
the debts that have been created, the wars that have been fought, you know, this period of like post-Cold War era, where we think that, you know, that Fukuyama end of history sort of thing that we thought would happen. Nope, it didn't happen. The Clash of Civilizations is here and the Middle East is over.
Yeah.
Right? Like Iran is still doing its thing and all that's still going to happen. But the Middle East is, you know, it's not the preferred battlefield, right?
No.
The next major thing is China, right?
Yeah.
You know, China or Iran. Those are the two major superpowers just China is the major superpower to focus on. And Iran is just always an interesting threat for their nuclear program. But, you know, there's always thawing relationship with them. Biden has not reinstituted the Iran nuclear deal yet. But there is some sort of like thawing of relationship there. Nevertheless, you know, next election is going to be another pivotal one.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
right?
It is.
And in this election,
Well, before the next, well, the next election is next year, right? Yeah. With the midterms.
Yeah, but before that, we have, like, and we'll probably talk about this later, but we have, I think it was the, was it a Mississippi abortion law that's going to be heading to the Supreme Court, and it directly challenges Roe v. Wade?
Yeah.
I think yeah. So, yeah. And if that gets picked up by the court, that's just a gift to the Democrats.
Yeah.
Because the culture war is winning in terms of, like, people's focus and attention. Mm-hmm. COVID, economy, and now this culture war stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like, all right, you know, who's going to, like, what is right, what is morally wrong, you know, wokeism and, you know, cancel culture and all that sort of shit.
Right.
You know, it's all, that's all the new focus. And, you know, the right has a whole bunch of, like, cultural things that they're angry at, things that they don't like, and the left has found their cultural little touchstone, which is now abortion. Mm-hmm. Right, and protecting that that right and privilege. Yeah. So, you know, with that, that's going to be the next sort of cultural inflection point, which for some reason the I don't know why the Republicans even care. It's just literally a small thing for their base. It should be like guns, right, where they use it as a dog whistle and nothing really happens to change about it. But what can I say? Texas and whatever they're doing, they were a gift to Gavin Newsom in his recall election. Yeah. There'll be a gift if they this thing will be a gift for the Democrats in the future. Mm-hmm. If they know how to play it right, if they know how to keep it in the news cycle, keep it, you know, on everyone's attention that, you know, if we don't, you know, again, they're coming after your rights.
Yeah.
You know, and what can I say? Abortion is one of those issues that, especially for Republicans, it's like, you know, we're all against it until you get caught trying to get it done. But yeah, nevertheless, all things considered, you know, a lot of news this week, a lot of important stuff happened, and our take on it.
Yeah,
I think we're gonna jump soon right into our next our next little section, which is our happy place, where we're gonna be talking about Ted Lasso, the last two episodes, a beard centric episode, and then an episode involving a funeral. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be touching upon other shows, such as a new show that's popped up on Apple TV Plus, being Foundation.
And how many episodes are there?
There's two episodes, but we're going to only watch one.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right, so we're going to take a break here and we'll be back. And we're back from the war room and straight into our happy place. All right, we took a little bit of time to take a break to actually watch our sort of like entertainment stuff for this week. And I think we should start with Ted Lasso. Because we skipped last week, let's do the beard episode. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was a bit trippy. It was focused purely on beard. If we remember, at the end of the match, you know, Ted is like, yeah. Well, are we going to come back? And he's like, yeah, no, I'm going to
do my own thing. And then, yeah. You know, he walks away and then, you know, that's it, right?
Right. But last week it picks up with...
Yeah. Yeah,
walked away, and what happened?
Everyone got a... So, unlike the first season, like, this season, we've got, like, centric episodes for every single person, right?
It's nice, because it's, like, that character development that you see that's hyper-focused just on them.
Yeah, and, like, first season, there was definitely characters who had a lot more focus, right, than others. You know, Sam didn't have a lot of focus in the first season, realistically, compared to what he has in this season. You know, Danny, to some extent, doesn't have as much focus. The real big players were, of course, like, you know, Jamie Tart, Roy Kent, you know...
Ted,
of course. And then... And so Beard was...
Rebecca.
Yeah. Beard was always that side character. He was always designed as that side character, right? You know, the foil to Ted, the more serious one. And so, yeah, like, following him just along this weird... It's like that Harold and Kumar, like, weird night adventure.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. That's exactly how it was. It's like a Harold and Kumar.
Yeah, it's like the weird night.
Go to White Castle.
Exactly. Just the weird adventure he gets on, goes on, jumping to different, you know, like things, getting into like scrapes and stuff that he really shouldn't be a part of, you know, his toxic relationship with his girlfriend, all of that, right? Like, it was a fun episode, right? But it was such a distraction. Right.
Yeah, it was a really winding road, in terms of where he ends up. Like, he ends up, like, you know, meeting up with some, he goes back to the pub that they all hang out with, right? Hang out at. They, he meets up with the three guys, the super fans. And, you know, hangs out with them, gets them into this, like, exclusive
club. Yeah.
That's just for, you know, those guys from Oxford and
Cambridge. He gets like, beaten. He, like, you know, he gets into trouble with someone who collects pants.
And he then gets chased by her boyfriend.
Who rages out, and then he gets his ass kicked by Jamie Tartt's dad and his gang. Like, that came out of nowhere.
Villains should pop up. To be honest, when I saw that, I thought, like, is he imagining it? Yeah, like, I thought it was, like, a, you know, like a...
You know, yeah.
Messed up dream, because he had been raging.
Yeah.
Right? He'd gone on a rager, so to speak.
And so, but, yeah, and it sort of culminates with him just, like, back to normal in the morning, right? Just going, it is what it is.
Right.
Yeah. But it's like, is this just another day in the life? Right? It's like, he's not fazed by it.
No, right? He's not. But everybody started looking at him like,
what's going on?
He was like, it is happened. What it is.
Yeah.
They're like, are you good? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, these last... And it sort of bleeds into this episode, because this episode is also another character-centric episode.
Yeah.
This time with Rebecca.
Yeah. Her
right? Fault. And
so, do we say spoilers?
No, it's fine. We can talk about it. Yeah. That's what it is.
Her father passes away.
Yeah.
And you understand why she has this, like, rage and anger towards him, her mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, and and we see her ex again, who's now had a baby.
Yeah.
Right? But I thought that was interesting because... She's always been, like, really pissed off at her mom for always being, like, super, really nice to her ex.
Yeah.
When he was such an asshole, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was, like, the big sort of, like, revelation at the end of the episode, which is, like, I do it because nothing pisses the guy off more. Yeah, it's, like...
For you to be nice to him. Like, he wants you to rage at him.
Yeah.
That's what gets him.
Yeah.
You know, that it's, gives him the high.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I got you, right?
Right.
It's like, I'm really, like, gnawing at you, and it's like, I'm winning.
Yeah. And right. When you don't give him what he wants, he's like...
He folds,
well,
right?
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, he
the
just...
The ride's
sort of,
over.
Yeah. Like, but here's the thing, though. It's like, Rebecca has to be nice to him, but she, like, he sees how it, like, it makes her seethe.
Yeah.
Right? Sassy just straight up says, fuck off. I don't even care. Get out.
Right,
right,
right, right.
And he goes, and he just shrinks like, all right, well, there's no point here. Right. Right? Because it's like, it's, you know, it's too easy. And right. then, of course, the mother has the best trick, which is just play it off and don't even think about it. And it drives Rupert, like, weird.
Right.
Right? And, like, but, like, for a Rebecca focused episode. Right? It really was like... I mean, again, daddy issues the show.
This season, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, this season is all just daddy issues.
Yeah.
Like, so everybody really... Everybody has, like, an issue. Everyone's, like, issues with their fathers. Like, Sam and his father's relationship. Neil and his father's relationship. Jamie Tartt and his father's relationship. Ted and his father's relationship.
You mean Nate.
Oh, yeah, Nate. Yeah, not Neil.
Right. I was like, which one's Neil?
Yeah. Now, Rebecca and her father's relationship, right? This, like, relationship that we kind of got teased at earlier in the season when the mom showed up for the first time. But, yeah, now we, like, it just comes out in all its whole, right?
Right.
But looking at, like, for this episode, like, there's one cringe part. I just hate that song, you know?
The Rick Astley?
Yeah, the Rick Astley song. It really did get overplayed, like, so badly. But, like, they did it, and it was like, whatever. That was my only cringe part of the episode. But for the most part, the episode really worked well. The comedy in the episode is what really... Because, you know, you need a levity in a sort of funeral episode. And Danny Rojas and his messed up feet.
Yeah, that was funny.
Right. Here's the thing that threw me for a loop. Was the Jamie Tartt, Roy Kent...
Yeah.
Like, love triangle that's being created all
of a sudden.
Oh, my
God. Do you... So... Jamie tells Keeley he loves her.
Yeah.
Right? And not even 2 minutes later, Roy says the same thing. You're like, really?
Yeah.
You had to, like, go there?
Yeah, they're getting into a love triangle sort of situation, and so I'm wondering if they're gonna navigate this in a funny way, and in a way that sort of subverts the expectation, or if it ever becomes a little too generic.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They've been really good at, you know, going against expectations.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like, so here's the thing: the last two episodes now have been real distractions from the A plot. Yeah. Right, which is, of course, you know, the football club.
Right.
You know.
And what's going on with Ted.
Exactly. And, you know.
And we learned a little bit more about Ted and why Ted is the way he is and why he has the anxiety.
Yeah.
He's the one who found his dad.
Yeah. No, he...
Did he hear the gun go off?
No, I think he just found it. I mean, like, he in the first season he talked about it, it's like he's never, you know, quit on anything in his life, right?
Right.
But, and he hates the idea of quitting.
Yeah.
Right? And he blames his dad for quitting. He right. didn't have enough time with his dad in his own opinions, right? He also had great times with his dad.
Right.
And with the few times he had it. Like, it's like this conflicted and complex relationship he has. Like, it is the A story and we're getting more into it.
Mm-hmm.
But how that's going to now apply to, like, you know, like, the plot. Like, the thing that's driving this forward, which is getting Richmond out of relegation into, you know, back into the Premier League. And then into winning it all.
Right.
All right. So, yeah, what can I say? There was this weird, unexpected thing that happens at the end of the episode that I want to touch on, which is, like, Rupert giving back all the shares to the
football club. But, so, the question is he giving it back to her because he's, like, so wigged out about her being nice? Like, he's, like, got nothing else to hold on. If she's like, oh, you know, I'm so over you.
Yeah, like, but right after that, he starts talking to Neil.
Yeah, so I think there's something going on with Neil. You mean Nate?
Yeah, with Nate. And so I think there might be a situation where he wants to, like, he's giving up his shares because he's gonna, you know, join another team, and he wants to start cherry picking people out of AFC Richmond.
Oh, yeah, but see, Nate's been an interesting guy. Like, he's got this, like, Dr., you know, Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll type of persona going on.
Yeah, no, it's here's the thing, his character is getting weirder and weirder.
Yeah.
Right? With his soul, like, this, the episode started off with them, like, making jokes about, like, what they would get, like, reincarnated as, right? And he wanted to be reincarnated as, like, some sort of predator, because, you know, so he can destroy anyone who, like, you know,
crosses ever him. Bullied him, or would try to bully him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, he has reacted to his responsibility and his position of power incredibly poorly.
Yeah.
And he's, yeah, what can I say? His humbling is going to be massive, right? Or he's going to only get worse and more, like, sure of himself.
Well, I mean, if what you think is going to happen, which is Rupert's trying to cherry pick.
Yeah.
Like, we know Rupert can't get Roy Kent.
Yeah.
Right? We know Beard is out. So who's, like, low-hanging fruit, or sort of the easy pickings? And it's Nate.
Yeah, and, right? And Nate is also that member of the team who recently proved himself, that Wonderkind, you know, event, his Wonderkind event.
Right.
Right? It's going to be very important for, I think it's going to be, like, this really, it's going to be that thing, right? And Nate, he's doing that weird betrayal thing.
Yeah.
Right? He, like...
So, but, I mean, that seems to be it. But who knows? Like, is it going to... So, maybe it's going to be against cast again, right? Where, like, the typical story is, you get the guy who's going to turn on the team. But maybe he's not that guy. Because remember, Ted's the one who gave him the chance.
Yeah.
He pulled him out. Like, there's got to be some loyalty there, right?
I absolutely think so. And I think maybe there's a redemption arc in here. Because, but also, it might be something that it's like, look, Dad, now I run a football team.
Possibly. Because, again, it's also father-centric, right?
Yeah. Daddy Issues is, like, the name of the game this season. Right? And getting past that, right, is sort of like the... Yeah. The main goal for all these characters. At least this season, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What can I say? So Ted Lasso is going some interesting places. I think there's like 3 episodes left before the end of the season.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we wait until season 3, which they were talking about at the Emmys very recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the show's won a ton of Emmys as well. So what can I say? This season is better than the first. More episodes but than the first. Normally, this is where I believe the first season would have ended, episode 10.
Mm-hmm. We've got, what, 2 or 3 more left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And again, you know what? I think this is a show that gets better and better.
Yeah.
Each episode builds on the other.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just excited where we're heading towards next. All right. So after this, we watched the first 2 episodes that were released on Apple TV Plus of Foundation.
Yes.
All right.
That was like, I haven't read the book.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay. I have like zero history here in terms of like plot line or how the story is going to progress. Mm-hmm. Visually, I think it's great.
Yeah.
I have a lot of, I'm not understanding this, but I can see where, you know, the story, it's not one of those confusing shows, right?
Yeah.
You can see like each episode is building on the,
yeah,
on each episode.
Something that they're doing definitely is they're taking from what, so I have read the book, the first book.
So how close to the books are they?
Okay. So in terms of the plot,
yeah,
right, they have gotten like the sort of sequence of events absolutely correct, right? But the plot is a lot more bare bones, okay, than what is being portrayed. In the show, you know, Gail, we have a lot of backstory on Gail.
Yeah.
Right? And the nature of her world, the nature, like, that's not in the book at all. Right? Like, it, you know, like, the cultural aspects of her world, that's not a thing in the book. In fact, we know nothing about the character.
Okay, which gives them the artistic or creative liberty to expand on it.
Harry Seldon, they played more truthful to him in the way that he acts. Harry Seldon being like the sort of the main messianic figure of this story. What Foundation like fundamentally is about is the idea that, you know, through mathematics and a process called psychohistory, they're able to successfully predict large waveform models of, you know, incoming events, you know, the future. And with that, they see that, you know, this galactic empire that has existed for 12,000 years will very soon collapse. In its collapse, there will be a 30,000 year dark age, right, where wars and planets would go to nonstop, you know, fighting, and, you know, it would be just 30,000 years of hell.
So so here's spoilers. So there's a terrorist attack that ends up happening. Yeah. That's in the books, right?
No,
it's not. So this is more their creative liberty that's taken.
The event, but the series of events is correct in the sense that they have their weird tribunal. They take a look at it all, and yeah, they're very smart. You know, the Galactic
Empire.
Yeah, the Galactic Empire says, yeah, no, just leave. You know, we'll let you have your foundation at the Galactic Edge, right?
Right.
That storyline, they get all the events right, and how it leads to these events is correct. The story was written in the 50s, so it's very bare bones in terms of its aesthetic, and its description of its aesthetics. It's very, very plot focused, because the nature of characters is unimportant to Foundation, because it's a story that takes place over such a long period of time, over 1,000 years, where, you know, it's like one character has to lead to another, because what you're watching is a very intricate set of dominoes. You don't realize it, and this is going to destroy the entire, like, sort of your ability to turn your brain off in the show, right? Because now you're gonna see it all, and there's gonna be no stakes, because for this early part, definitely in this first season, everything that happens is going according to plan, right? We are not privy to the whole picture, right? But things are being done on purpose, right? Anything that happens to the character of Harry Seldon, right? He is well aware that it's going to happen, right? He is so well aware that it's going to happen, he can change it if he wants to.
But he doesn't.
If he doesn't change it, he doesn't want it to change.
So he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, so in episode 2, we see Harry Seldon being stabbed and dying.
And he knows who was going to do it.
Yes.
Or did he? Do you think he created it so that he would do it?
Absolutely.
Or do you think he told him, you have to do this?
That could be also in it. Harry Seldon dies in a different way in the books, because it just sort of like happens. He dies.
How does he die in the books?
So in the books, he just dies of old age.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, there's a bigger jump between a time between Harry Seldon and Salvor Hardin.
Okay.
Right? There's a little bit of a bigger jump in time, and, you know, the Foundation and their Encyclopedia Galactica thing is, like, being built up.
As opposed to what's in the TV show.
So, yeah. But, no, in the TV show, we're seeing, like, these things happen.
Right. We're, like, we're told, okay, 35 years in advance. Yeah. We'll move forward 35 years. Yeah. So, is...
Salvor Hardin.
Yeah, Salvor Hardin. Is she one of the descendants of the survivors?
Yeah, she's one of the descendants of the people who started the Foundation. Okay. And
why is she able to get to the...
Okay, this whole thing is stemming from... So in the books, this is like... Salvor Hardin is the midway through the first book.
Okay.
Right? There's more stuff that happens, like the Traitor, Merchant Kings, and like all their stuff that happens even later. So Salvor Hardin's the midway of this thing. Harry Seldon starts it, then we get to Salvor Hardin. But what it is that Salvor Hardin is a necessary part of the next step in the plan.
Okay. What about Gal? Is
a necessary part in the plan.
But she's not on the planet, because...
Yeah. So this is the early part. Like, in the next season, there comes parts in the later Foundation series where things don't go to plan, where things are going to actually fall apart, where there's a chance for the plan to fail, right?
And then they have to do a course correction.
Yeah, and then they have to course correct. But in these early days, the point of the first Foundation book is really when you realize in the early days, when you're going through it, you're like, oh, wow, they did plan for every single alternative. They knew that this would eventually occur. Right, like the issue that they're having with, like, in Hardin's time that we're gonna see, is that no one actually knows what the hell they're supposed to be doing anymore with the Foundation. Like, is the Foundation even supposed to be like it's completely lost?
Where's the Emperor in this, or the Empire in this?
So the Empire, I think, falls apart actually incredibly quickly, within like 100 or 200.
So
years.
They've accelerated the Empire's fall.
The Empire was always gonna fall. There was no way around.
Right, but it was either you can slow it down or you can accelerate it.
So yeah, I think they gave them the option on how to slow it down, and they won't do it. Their genetic dynasty won't end. That's another thing that was added.
The genetic dynasty.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. I thought that was very cool.
I think Lee Pace is such a great actor.
Yeah, so that was added. That's not in the books whatsoever. Like the nature of the Empire, right, is very limited. It really is just like an allegory for Rome, right? Okay, yeah. Rome is this central figure, this central city hub empire area that is so dependent on the outer reaches, so dependent on the ties of everything else around it, that it's leveraged itself.
So I'm wondering if the acceleration of the Empire is because of what happened in the second episode.
In the second episode you see like him executing individuals, him laying waste to planets.
Yeah.
Right? It's...
Because remember, it was his benevolence, right? It was their benevolence that allowed the Empire to grow.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh my god, we're dealing with a tyrant.
Yeah.
We need to...
Yeah. Fundamentally, it's...
So, yeah. Okay, so the Empire falls. The Empire, that's the Dawn, the dusk and what is the day?
Yeah, day,
day dawn, day, day dawn. Dusk. So yeah. It's the future to come, yeah. Which is dawn. Day is current, right? And dusk is old age.
Yeah.
It's interesting the way they did that.
Yeah, yeah. That's not in the books whatsoever. It's also really cool in the aesthetics. It's yeah, got this it is. Cool, it's almost like Dune sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a couple of talks about like robot wars yeah. and stuff like that. That's because Isaac Asimov's books, The Foundation, and iRobot exist in the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there's like that little backdoor like yeah. iRobot references, and that also includes Earth. Like Earth existed once too and everything. So right, it's like right, it's just civilization super far in the future. But yeah, with like so we're seeing these early sort of days. Where they're definitely here's the thing, they've severely expanded on Harry Seldon's thing, and Gale and all that sort of stuff. Pretty much as soon as they go like, all right, we're heading towards Terminus.
Yeah.
It's sort of the end of that part of that third of the book.
Right, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, so they're definitely going to be expanding that section of the book. Salvor Hardin is another important section of the book,
mm-hmm.
And you know like the. And but here's the thing, we haven't seen the third part of the book, third and fourth sections of the book.
Right.
You know, with the merchants and all that sort of stuff. So we're like, I think this first season is really going to focus on that. The issue is that the books were never really completed. They got to around like year 600 of the Foundation plan. They never really figured out, they never really completed the books. That does give them an opportunity to finally finish this thing once yeah. and for all. And also like trim the fat and like speed up like the different points in time. Yeah, but what can I say, like found, like they're starting it off, they're getting it right, they're getting a lot of the characters right, and so Harry Seldon is one of those characters who will constantly show up.
Hmm.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Like you saw him murdered, he's dead. He will is I'm telling you right now, he's gonna come back.
Right.
Like maybe a clone, maybe something else, right? I'm not gonna give too many hints. Right. Like, what's the point of the vault that was shown in the first episode?
Right.
Why is the vault there?
Right.
Right.
And here's the thing is, so it did take me a bit to figure out, but it does that going to present day, past. We haven't yeah. gone to present day, past, future yeah. yet.
Yeah.
But I anticipate at some point we'll be in future going to past or you know, present day with a projection of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that they're definitely eventually going to show a big projection of the future, right? To show like something going horribly wrong.
Yeah.
After things go, like, because here's the thing, they're building it up like things are going wrong right now, right? But there's going to, like, for me, the big moment is like, everything is going horribly wrong with like Salvor Hardin stuff. Mm-hmm. Like everything is going horribly wrong. They're messing up here. They're messing up there. There's like a chance that the Foundation is going to get nuked. Mm-hmm. Like it gets really bad for them. And then like,
is that the Empire though doing that?
No, it's the neighboring factions, okay. Right? Like the Empire is like it's definitely falling apart. Where I think they're losing support. Like there's that big moment where you're like, wow, okay, no, everything has been always going to plan,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like nothing has been deviating. Like we're gonna get that moment, but there's also the same moment where you realize that, oh crap, things are mm-hmm. like things are losing it.
So I think when we get that moment that you know, oh yeah, everything was going through plan. According to plan, I think it'd be interesting to go back
yeah.
to the beginning episodes again yeah. and see connect the dots. Because right now we can't necessarily connect the dots.
Yeah.
Because everything, you know, it's building up.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to the next episode.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important thing is, you know, are you going to look forward to the next episode?
Yeah.
And my answer is yes.
Yeah. I mean, something that they say in the very beginning, and it's the nature of the show, the psycho history of it all. Being able to predict events in the future for large scale stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm telling you right now, that's a big old lie. It predicts not the large scale. It predicts the minute scale stuff.
So it's so, but it must predict the big scale stuff too, of course, right? But it also because that's what Harry said was that oh, I don't know what an individual would this do. I can't predict that.
I'm going to show you my proof in something you've already seen.
Okay.
All right. Harry Seldon has two remarks. Has a couple of remarks about the Imperial Library.
Yeah, he said it would get destroyed.
Yeah, he talks to someone early. He talks to Gale early on and said, this library will be destroyed one day. It's a mercy that, you know, stealing is a mercy.
Yeah.
And he gives her a book. Right? He later looks at the library around, just in a small scene where he's walking and he looks around at the library.
Yeah.
He then, in his testimony, talks about how it's like, oh, we have an Imperial Library. It goes like, for how long?
Right.
Right? And then the thing crashes on the Imperial Library.
Right, yeah.
It's destroyed. He knew it was going to go.
Right.
Right? He says he can't figure out. It's like, I didn't know this was going to happen.
Right, but no, she said, she goes, so Harry, something's happening to the the corridor.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Oh, so it's essentially a space elevator.
Space elevator, but I can't. Yeah, they have a special name for it. Yeah, they have a special name for it. I can't remember that. Sorry, guys. Yeah. It's like pretty late that we're doing this.
Yeah.
Right. But so for me, it was like, how would she know when he's the one who predicted this, right? Mm-hmm. But it makes sense.
She saw the equations, right?
She saw the equations, and if she saw the equations, there were his equations. So he knew that's what was going to happen.
Yeah. And so he knew the elevator would fall. He knew it would destroy the library, right? He took his last look around and he gave away a book.
Yeah.
Right? A book that's important to the future, of course.
Right.
Because everything is done on purpose.
Right.
With Harry Seldon.
Right.
But so, like, that's an early example of, like, him hiding a little aspect of the truth, mm-hmm. which is he knows a lot more of the future than he lets on. Not these large-scale things. Even when he tells people the truth, or when he tells people aspects of the future, it could be a lie.
Right.
Because it will service his goal of making sure you do a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, we're going to see, like, how essentially everything shakes out over the period of this show. But, like, Foundation is one of those things that, like, they need to get right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They need to figure out also where to trim, where to lose. What can I say? Foundation is a precursor to Dune. Right?
Right.
And they definitely took, but here's the thing, they took definitely a lot of Dune
imagery.
Imagery, yeah. It's kind of weird what they did. Because the imagery, it's really striking, but it's very much like, wow, this is like it's great and cinematic. I love it. But it's like, it, like, so with Dune coming out later this year, I'm going to be really excited to
it'll be interesting to see.
The aesthetic is very similar, but they're very different films, right? Because, like, this one is hardcore just science fiction.
Yeah.
Right? Dune becomes very philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And
you know, like, deals with religious concepts.
Right.
So, yeah, like, this one, it's hardcore into the science fiction. It's like part of the granddaddy of science fiction.
Right.
And this is, like, one of, like, what can I say? This is one of my favorite books. And so, yeah, we're getting into this. You're seeing, like, the seeds of stuff being played in for later. And they're getting a lot of the events of the books right, but they're definitely expanding upon stuff that was never touched upon. You know, it was the setting.
But the books had an empire, right?
Yeah.
And they had an emperor.
Yeah, they just, emperor, empire. That's it.
Okay.
Right? Like, we know the name of the empire. We know that the empire, like, Trantor is, like, just a city. Like, it's like a giant, like, megapolis of a planet.
Right.
Right? That's it. Right? We know that it imports everything.
Right.
Right? It needs to import everything. It doesn't produce
Has no manufacturing, agricultural, or any of that.
Yeah, it doesn't produce anything, right? It's one of those things. It's one of those planets. So, but that's it. Like, but they're able to tell this bigger story. They're able to flesh out stuff that really wasn't ever touched upon. You know, showing different sides of the universe. You know, like, that there's, you know, people who feel that science is heresy.
Right.
And they live on a water planet.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's like, it must suck there. But,
right.
But, yeah. what can I say? Like they're feeling all the stuff that they're feeling around. I'm liking, even though like it's something that they never touched once. So I'm quite happy that I'm liking the aesthetic of it all. But yeah, we're gonna see like the plot where it goes from here is only weirder, and then there's more. But if they do this smart, they should really like every season should jump like hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Right. We should like have Jared Harris's, you know, Harry Seldon show up as his little thing that he does, right? And everything as a continuation of like past characters. But they really should get this done in like three seasons.
Yeah.
They really should not like stretch this, you know, past three.
Right.
Yeah. We're gonna say I'm excited.
Cool. I am too. Yeah. We've been looking forward to it since we saw the first trailers, and I think it's lived up to expectations.
Yeah, so far. So yeah, thank you guys for joining us on this later than normal iCast.
Yes, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it as always. Apologize for last week, and we can't stop the what, Chris?
You can't stop the signal, guys.
All right, take care. Bye.